Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here. And on the phone, the author of a book entitled The Rise of American High School Sports and the Search for Control, 1880 to 1930, a book we talked about a few weeks ago, and we're excited to have the author on with us, Bob Pruder. Welcome to Downtown.
Hello there. Is this the zone?
It sure is. You are in the zone, absolutely.
Hi, Bob. This is Bruce Pratt. I was wondering if, as I said in my email, if you could just give a quick synopsis of people of really where the origins of interscholastic sports are in our history.
Okay. It's a long origin, but it was very, very slow in developing. It really began in the early private schools when the kids were going to school. On their lunch break or after school, they would play games. And this occurred early in the 19th century. But when I talk about high school sports, I mean sports between schools and among schools in, like, tournaments and matches and all that. That took a long time to develop. And it was still in the private schools. You could say in the it began just after the Civil War in the late 1860s among a few private schools in the Northeast, in Maine and New Hampshire and Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Philip Exeter, Phillips Andover. Schools like that, but in the 1880s, the public high schools started taking it up, and by the 1890s, the majority of schools that were participating in high school sports were the public schools, and it became a lot greater as it went on.
Now, one of the things you point out in the book is that the original emphasis for the teams came from the students. It wasn't a top-down thing. They organized them. They got officials if were needed. They made schedules with all the players and the students. And it was only when teams started to have where a lot of the players weren't even from the school that there started to become this first sense that there needed to be some administration. Am I remembering that correctly?
You are. What was interesting about it is that, yes, the students began the sports themselves, just like in the colleges back in the 19th century. It was the students in the colleges that started up the sports and ran them. And the high schools were just, in a way, imitating the colleges.
Right. And you also point out that there were a lot of conflicts because colleges eventually began running a lot of these tournaments, that high school players were involved in, something which today the NCAA has a lot of rules about, but back then there weren't too many of them.
Right. I just want to say that at first the teachers in the high schools were different to the students participating because it was something after school and on their own time, and they felt they didn't have any say in the matter. But the issue was that the students represented themselves as coming from the school itself, and it suddenly dawned on them that if they're going to represent the school, we better have correct behavior, you know. And then the physical education departments began in the schools as well, and it was the physical educators who started to try to control the high school students to eliminate, overage students, I'm having a senior moment.
We all have them.
What do you call someone who is from outside
Ringers.
The team? Ringer. I couldn't think of the name Ringer. You know, we don't have them so much anymore. But anyway, that was a big problem back then. And so the schools began controlling the early in the 20th century, instituted control over the athletics, and they formed, and the teachers formed the leagues. You know, the educators formed the leagues, and the leagues could impose rules, and so gradually this control went very a little bit higher every year. Soon, whole cities would control the athletics, and then the state. There would be state athletic associations that would control the students. And then by the end of the 30s, by the end of the 20s, there was a big national organization, the National Federation of High School Associations. And so it was controlled on a national level by the end of the 20s. And at that time, they felt they needed to kick the colleges out of the business of running, meets and tournaments for the students. And one of the reasons they wanted to kick the colleges out, the colleges were making a lot bigger. It was a lot bigger back in the 20s than it is now. They had huge national tournaments, a national basketball tournament, you know, a national track and field tournament. Both of those were held in Chicago. And then there were nowadays they have football teams crossing the country now playing each other, but they had it hugely in the 20s, and the newspapers would name national champions, you know, and there would be common Massachusetts would produce a lot of great football teams, and they would compete with some Ohio team or some Chicago team for the national championship of the United States.
Now, when the schools began to impose some of this control, Bob, the students rebelled and even formed what were at the time known as secret societies. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we forget that, you know, high schools were trying to imitate the colleges, and just like the colleges had Greek letter societies, fraternities, sororities, high schools did too. Back then, they called them secret societies because, you know, they were secret and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, to make them seem elite. And if you don't have the knowledge, then you're a barbarian. Anyway, you know, the students across the country in the early first decade created sororities and fraternities, and these fraternities tended to control the athletics in each school. They dominated the athletics, and it was a very unhealthy situation where the fraternities were running things and everything, and so school systems across the country eventually, by World War I, had kicked out all the fraternities and sororities, and that's why we don't have them today. Although they still continue over the decades. I remember my old high school had a secret fraternity, you know, that they kept from, you know. Anyway, the fraternities were a big problem then. And this all had to do with control of the students. And the fraternities were like, you know, the backbone for student fighting against, you know, the faculties over their attempt to control them.
Well, at the end of your book, which, as we've talked about, I really did enjoy, and it's something we've talked a lot about here, but both Rich and I have a background in high school sports. You point out that even today, one of the things that we really face is that why are schools charging admission, sponsoring sports, doing all these things that really don't go to the core of most public schools' stated mission statements. How has it become such a part of what we are? We've only got a little time here, but how has it become so much of what we are that it continues when it may not even be in the best interest of the school or the students?
Europeans are amazed that we have high schools and colleges with huge football stadiums. What does that have to do with the mission of education? You know, and so Europeans are astonished by this, and we should be actually astonished by this. But I think it goes back to the 19th century when the Americans imitated their British brothers, you know, and sisters, and the public schools in England, which means the private schools, all had athletics, and so did the colleges. So I think America just took up the same practice as the British, and that's how it began. And nobody thought it was kind of strange that, you know, a school should be supporting athletic teams, because it came in so gradually and developed. And I think it became strange when early in the last century, high schools and colleges started building big stadiums and field houses and everything. And you mentioned a few weeks ago about the Oak Park field house, which is, I mean, even today, you know, you go in there and you're aghast. It's so huge. I mean, I have never seen as big a field house as the Oak Park field house in all my years, you know, and that was built, you know, in the late 20s. And part of the reason was when the high schools kicked the colleges out of supporting, you know, like indoor track and field meets, Oak Park field house was designed to, support big tournaments, you know, indoor track and field, basketball and everything. And so it was part of the high schools taking over from the colleges some of the big tournament business.
Well, it's a fascinating book. We sure enjoyed reading it. It's been a treat for us to talk with you this afternoon. Bob Pruder, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, and thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it. And could you send me a pod?
We will make sure you get this.
It is absolutely on the way as we speak.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm glad you appreciate the book. I'm glad you put the word out on the book.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Bob. Bob Pruder with us here on Downtown, a Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday afternoon. Bruce, dropping things, kicking things.
I know, breaking the microphones and stuff.
You got some new books, I see.
Bunch of great books coming up. We just got One Nation Under Baseball, How the 1960s Collided with the National Pastime by John Florio and Wheezy Shapiro, accomplished writers. The forward is by Bob Costas. The forward is worth the book, the price of the book alone. We also got a book about Upton Bell, one of the legends and well-known in New England.
Who is on upcoming, I think, this week's Bob Ryan podcast.
Bob Ryan's podcast called Present at the Creation, My Life in the NFL and the Rise of America's Game. And a book I've heard about, knew was coming out, I can't wait to read, called The California Golden Seals, A Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and One of the NHL's Most Outlandish Teams. If you think Finley's A's were crazy, the Oakland and then Seals and later the Cleveland Barons were out of control. So we have a lot of good books coming up, and I just found out we'll be talking about The Colonel and Hug with Steve Steinberg and Lyle Spatz this time next week.
Fantastic.
Just this moment found that out. So, yeah, we got lots of good stuff coming up.
Good stuff. Thank you, Bruce.